It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
What is up, crew, and welcome to the show. This week we're going to get deep into a Second Amendment conversation with Edgar from Guns for Everyone. But first, let's take a quick minute and talk about Swagger Bipods. Now, if you've never heard of Swagger Bipods, well, I would highly encourage you to go over and check out their website, swaggerbipods.com. And their revolutionary field model bipod is pretty doggone cool. I mean, if you're trekking, if you're out in the woods, maybe doing some Rocky Mountain style hunting, then that bipod that they've got, the field model, been around for quite a few years, pretty revolutionary the way it works. But they've also got some other new inventive bipods and even shooting sticks soon to come out, what they call the Swagger Stalker and the Swagger Stalker Lite, as well as the Steelbanger bipod. So get over to Swagger Bipods, check out some of the cool stuff they have. Again, that's swaggerbipods.com. All right, crew, help me welcome Edgar to the house this week. How are you, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You bet, man. I'm glad you could join us and talk a little bit about yourself and all the various projects. You've got a lot of them, looks like. A lot of irons in the fire.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, I'd like to start out. I'd like to get somewhat personal, a little bit personal. I always try to ask this of my guests, just to kind of get an idea, because we all have different backgrounds, and we all, you know, some of us grew up around firearms, some of us didn't, some of us grew up in, you know, a rural area, some of us grew up urban, you know, that sort of thing. So all of our backgrounds are a little different, and, you know, at the end of the day, we all come together in the, you know, in the firearm community and under the banner of the Second Amendment and all that kind of stuff. So as far as growing up, tell us a little bit about that, about your story.
Well, growing up to my grandparents, my parents are both from Mexico, came here in the early 80s, came here illegally, and then, so growing up to my grandparents, the gun conversation was just non-existent, mm-hmm. mostly because it's just not big. It's just not big in Mexico.
It's starting to grow, culture.
But it's not big.
What you're saying.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said it's not a part of the culture.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not a big a part of the culture as it is here in the U.S. So I actually didn't get into guns until my adulthood. I was in my early 20s when I really started getting into guns, mm-hmm. Just because for my family, just never a conversation. So not bad, not anti-gun, but also not pro-gun.
Gotcha.
It just didn't exist in my family. Grew up, started working around firearms, started getting into the training, did some SWAT training and stuff like that. And that's really where the love for guns grew.
Nice. Now, I'm assuming no issues as far as the family, right, with that once you got into it, because that was kind of a non-issue. So they were fairly accepting of that.
Well, I got kicked out of my house when I was 13 years of age, so I don't think my mom had anything to say about guns, period.
There you go.
I got married when I was 15 years of age. I had three kids by the time I was 21.
That's a similar story to me, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. And so when we got into guns, as far as the family's concerned, yeah, it was all of us. Mm-hmm. My wife, my kids, we all kind of immersed ourselves into the Second Amendment culture initially, and then we kind of stepped back. Me personally stepped back from the Second Amendment culture and looked at it more as a freedom thing, mm-hmm. not so much just a gun thing.
Right.
So we started to integrate that as well, and then that's when, in 2010, that's kind of when Guns for Everyone was created, mm-hmm. and it's kind of blown up ever since.
Right. So would you say that getting into the community and obtaining firearms and the the culture and having fun and that sort of thing, that came first. That came before the actual Second Amendment awareness part of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the gun thing started off more as an employment thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we started carrying a gun for work. I was a contractor for the state of Colorado. Did basically, it's cheaper to hire private security than to pay state troopers. Mm-hmm. So they hired us to take care of state buildings and state executives and stuff like that. So because of it, obviously, we carried guns and did training and all that stuff. So it really started there. Mm-hmm. And then because there was guns in the house, obviously a safety conversation had to happen. And then we started shooting. And that was my safety conversation. Hey, let's go shooting. There's no better way to, in my opinion anyways, to teach the kids about safety than actually doing it. Mm-hmm. And being active about it. So it started, we all liked it. We all enjoyed it as a family. And so, yeah, it really started as an employment and then the fun thing. And then after that, the activism began.
Right. And I think that's pretty common. I don't think that's
a
foreign idea at all. Now, when that Second Amendment light bulb clicked, when the whole freedom, liberty thing clicked, was there an event or a series of events or anything that happened in your life, in the world, whatever, that kind of made that light bulb go off and you started thinking more along the Second Amendment line of things?
Well, for us in the state of Colorado, it was the change in politics. Mm-hmm. Colorado historically has been a purple state, very independent, not Republican, not Democrat, just very much leave me alone and I'll leave you alone.
Right.
We have a lot of quote-unquote liberals here that are very much pro-gun. That's changed in the past decade or so because of the amount of people from different states moving here to the state of the culture and politics. So that was really when we started getting immersed into the 2A conversation and the liberty conversation, when the change in politics started happening. Mm-hmm. Before that, Guns for Everyone, to be honest with you, was more of a parody type YouTube channel. We would do gun reviews, but in a very parody type way. We would do gun videos, shooting videos, but again, in a very, very much in a parody type manner, mm-hmm. not in a very serious manner. So that's kind of when the shift happened, though.
Gotcha. Now, with Guns for Everyone, there's a lot of components to that, it seems like. You want to talk a little bit about each of those different components?
Yeah, I mean, we still have the activism side of it, which we're kind of getting back into. Mm-hmm. We kind of dropped that off a little bit, and that kind of went into the back burner. We're bringing that back up. There's a retail side of it that just started last year. But our biggest thing is doing the free concealed carry classes. We do free concealed carry classes. We have been doing that since, I'd say, like, late 2011 mm-hmm. is when I really started doing the free concealed carry classes, getting really aggressive with it in 2012. By the end of 2012, we were basically the largest handgun training company in the state of Colorado, something that we still hold right now, and slowly growing into the region, the largest handgun training company in the region that's including Wyoming and New Mexico and stuff like that. Now, this is in terms of the amount of students that we instruct. A year, we're typically shy of 10,000 students that we instruct a year. A pretty outrageous number compared to other companies. On top of that, right now, actually, just before we got on, I don't know if you want to admit this, but I messed up on our times, and we're doing this an hour later because I'm an idiot. But I was actually meeting with Antonia Okafor, and those who are, mm-hmm. if you are in the Second Amendment community, you may know who she is. She just joined Guns for Everyone. She's the women's director of Guns for Everyone now, so she's heading up the women's division. And we're going to, again, start doing classes, not just for that demographic, but we're also going to start doing activism classes and civilian. Here in the state of Colorado, we have civilian citizen lobbyists. Okay. So we're going to start doing classes for that so people can get involved politically and kind of try and change that culture once again. Mm-hmm. in the benefit of the Second Amendment.
Now, with offering the free CCW classes, are there, I guess first of all, are there any requirements for people out there? Does it go through an application process, or how does that work?
In the state of Colorado, the way it works is you have to go, if you want your concealed handgun permit, you have to attend a class that is offered and taught by a certified instructor. Mm-hmm. But yeah, once they complete that and they have a certificate, they have to go apply for their concealed handgun permit. I'm not a big fan of the government, but as far as government processes go, it's relatively painless. In the state of Colorado, there's really no curriculum that we have to follow. There's no time requirements, stuff like that. So every instructor kind of decides what their curriculum is going to be. So relatively painless. But yeah, there's definitely an application process if you want to obtain your concealed handgun permit in the state of Colorado. We are not at a constitutional carry level yet. And to be honest with you, I don't think Colorado ever will have that.
Right. With that's interesting that you talk about that process, though. You know, I mean, there are requirements here in Texas where I'm at. A lot of other states have those requirements. So what you're saying, I guess, is that the state basically leaves it up to the individual trainers, the individual instructors, right?
Yeah, as far as the curriculum is concerned, yeah. A lot of people are surprised because a lot of Texans are coming here and ruining my state. you need to work on that, dude, and keep your people out there in Texas. We'd really much appreciate it if you guys stay over there.
We'll build a border wall. I'll get on that. Not a problem.
Yeah. That's the irony right there, is an anchor baby yelling out, stay home or go back home. A lot of people are surprised how much more lenient Colorado is when it comes to handgun laws than Texas is. Because our process is much more lenient than yours. I think your guys is, you guys have to follow a curriculum, if I'm not mistaken, and 8 hours, and you have to go shooting and stuff like that. So it's much more structured than the state of Colorado.
Yeah. And I find that weird from state to state when you're dealing with these firearm regulations. Be it concealed carry, be it constitutional carry, the restrictions on what you can have, how you can purchase it, you know, whatever the case may be. The thing going on right now in Washington with 1639, getting a lot of press, of course. And one of the things that I find interesting, sitting down here in Texas especially, is that Washington has open carry. And we have it too if you have your license
permit
to carry. And I'm thinking, okay, Washington is going off the rails crazy with this 1639, but yet they've got open carry. So I don't our state legislatures, and of course obviously the federal government, they're bipolar. there's no other way
it's
to explain
crazy.
It
yeah, it's pretty insane. I mean, what is it, Vermont that doesn't even have a permit process, but all at the same time, relatively stricter laws in other areas. Mm-hmm. It's very weird, very very weird.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's part of the. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know that you start dealing with 10th Amendment issues, obviously, and the whole idea of the colonies moving into independence and moving into the United States was to have a system to where different states could try different things and do their own things. And we all know local government works best. So, the smaller the better. I always advocate, being heavily involved in your city government, in your county politics for sure, and then in the state level, because that's where you can get the most traction, you can bend the most ears, and that sort of thing. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to say, you know, there needs to be some fluidity and some consistency from state to state on things. And then part of me says, well, no, because that's not the way it was originally set up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. And, I'm an anarchist, so, and not an Antifa, I'm going to burn stuff down anarchist. I'm a very traditional, I'm an ANCAP. Leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, period. I don't want government in my life at all. And with that philosophy, it's kind of my philosophy actually falls in line more with the 10th Amendment, because it is very much, if I join a community, it doesn't mean there's no rules. That's where a lot of people misunderstand anarchy. Anarchy doesn't mean no rules, it just means no rulers. And if I don't want to participate in an HOA or a community, I'm more than welcome to go somewhere else and go to a community that agrees with me. And that's kind of, I think, where our founding fathers kind of were like, well, you have that option where if California is more your speed, then if you do like socialism and if you do like communists and if you do like all of that, then you're more than welcome to go to California and participate in that stuff. And you know, if you want to be a gun-toting hippie, then you go to Colorado, because that's what Colorado essentially was. It's full of a lot of gun-toting hippies. And that's honestly more my speed. Very much just independent.
Right.
Because you're in Colorado, I mean, you're hiking and you're shooting all at the same time. Big contradiction there for a lot of other people. So I think I fall more with in line with that. It's just every state, every culture is very different, instead of it being so similar and so the same.
Now, does Colorado, you talked about the citizen lobby or the civics lobby or whatever, does Colorado have some type of a state 2A organization?
Yeah, and you know, in the interest of not getting too negative, I don't want to get into it too much about that organization, but there is one here in the state of Colorado. There's one major one that unfortunately has made the news for a lot of negative reasons, not so much stuff that's not even Second Amendment related.
Wow.
So I think it's more beneficial if I personally don't talk about that. I don't think your show is the right platform for that.
Right, they'll remain nameless for now. I was just curious. And that, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's sad that it's not even Second Amendment related, but I hear a lot of, and I'm also not going to name drop any of the organizations out there, but, you know, from state to state, there are some that, I don't know, I don't want to say compromise, but, you know, for lack of better terminology at the moment, that do some really weird, silly things. And, you know, even here in Texas, you know, it aggravates me. I will mention the one here simply because I am here, and that's Texas State Rifle Association. And I was a regional director for them for 2 years, and the lobbyist that we have in Austin she's a firecracker. She's great. But as an organization, they tend to get way too political with things, and it aggravates me when you're talking about, I mean, we're talking about you and guns for everyone, right? The Second Amendment is for everyone, and there's no need to play politics with that. And they do quite often. They'll make mistakes They'll make excuses, rather, for some of these quote-unquote pro-2A politicians. When they step off the rails, kind of like the people that aggravates me now with Trump is, you know, the whole bump stock thing went down and the, you know, comments about suppressors went down and, you know, what did he say, take the firearms due process later went down. And people want to make excuses. Well, he's the least of two evils and blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't. To me, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter because I don't care if that politician is pro 2A 99.9999% of the time. That one time he screws up, you need, or her screws up, let's not be sexist here, they need to hold their feet to the fire and say, hey, Jack, you know, smack them on the head and say, quit doing that. We see what you're doing. You know, we're not going to put up with it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with holding somebody's feet to the fire. And too many people, because 99% of the time they agree with that politician, they want to make excuses for that 1%. And I think that's wrong. I think that's the wrong attitude to have.
Yeah. So that's been kind of a difficult one for me as far as an argument or a debate standpoint. Not argument, but a debate standpoint. Because obviously, as a Second Amendment organization, I'm a single issue individual.
Right.
Now, a lot of these people don't understand that when I do make a comment about Trump, it's solely based off of Second Amendment issues. Because they're always telling me, well, what about this? What about, like, I don't care about that stuff. If whatever he did somewhere else, or he plays good golf, or Mar-a-Lago is beautiful, it's not important to me. What's important to me is what he's doing with my gun rights.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, if I don't have my freedom with gun rights, then I don't have any other freedom to, because I can't protect him anymore. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's always been that important. I think a lot of people, when you do criticize Trump on his gun issues, they right away want to talk about other issues, and like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about guns, plain and simple. Like, let's discuss guns, and we got to be honest that Trump sucks when it comes to guns. Right. He's not a good gun president. He's not. If you like him because of other social issues or other economic issues, like that, that's fantastic, but I'm looking at this from a gun perspective, and Trump is a horrible president for guns. And too many people, that cognitive dissonance where it's just like they believe what they believe, and they actually, not only do they believe what they believe, which is whatever, but they actually make stuff up to make Trump feel like he's actually good. And in reality, he's not. This is where I lose a lot of people. But Obama was better for guns than Trump is.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah.
We got to be honest about that. I mean, there's a lot of issues to dislike Obama on, but when it comes to guns, there's really he actually helped the Second Amendment. Bump stocks we got under Obama. Mm-hmm. Like, not too many people understand that we got bump stocks under Obama. It got clarified under him. He didn't have anything to do with it, obviously, but it was still under his administration. Yeah.
Well, and pistol braces. There was some pistol brace rulings under him. Yeah.
He signed it. Now, obviously, it was part of another bill, but he still signed into effect carrying on national forests, national parks, something you couldn't do before as openly as you can right now. That was because of Obama. Trump, on the other hand, is going complete opposite.
Right.
Complete opposite.
And I think there was another factor at play with Obama, because being, you know, coming out of nowhere the way he did, and being the darling of the, you know, of the left, the darling of the media and all that kind of stuff, I think that it created a situation that with Trump was the direct opposite situation was created. But with Obama, there was a situation created where it was like, whoa, who is this dude? And this dude, we see him as a threat, and so we're going to all join together. We're going to all stand up. We're all going to, you know, we're all going to tell this dude no on, you know, anything and everything anti-Second Amendment that he tries to push. And I think that it was the opposite has happened under Trump, where it's like, oh, we have a Republican, we can relax, we can do whatever. And we have seen the ramifications of that now, of not,
correct,
like I said, not standing up and holding these yahoos feet to the fire.
Correct. Well, don't you guys have a representative? He's a leader in your guys' legislature that shot down concealed carry, or constitutional carry.
Yeah, we've got. You're probably talking. You may be talking about John Cornyn in the Senate. I don't know.
He's the leader, right? He's the Senate president or something. He shut it down because.
Never mind. You're talking about at the state level.
Yeah, Texas.
Yeah, that is actually my state senator. And I have not been able to get a meeting with that Yahoo. You can't get an explanation over the phone. You can't, nothing. He's dodging people left, right, and center. But he, it was not constitutional carry. And I'm not real sure exactly what you're referring to, but there was a bill. It did end up passing. But there was a bill, and what it did was it was going to allow, if a state of emergency was declared in Texas, right, it would grant basically constitutional carry for 2 weeks from the date that was that was enacted, right, or declared, I should say. So what happened is they passed it in the House. It went to the Senate. And the Senate said, oh, no, 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 no. 48 hours is all, you know, all we need. And they kicked it back to the House, and the House said, there's no way. Texas is huge, you know, and you're talking about a situation where, you know, an emergency's been declared. Things are, you know, roads are flooded. Things are tore up. You know, it takes long enough to get anywhere you need to go. It takes hours in Texas. You know, compound that with traffic and road conditions and other things, and people need way longer than 48 hours. So the Senate and the committee from the House finally agreed upon the two-week thing, 14 days, 2 weeks, and it did pass the Senate. However, my senator from this area for the state, who is, yes, head of the Senate, and the senator from the El Paso area, both voted with the Democrats to shoot that bill down. Now, it passed because we had Republican majority, but it still chaps my hide that I've got a senator from rural East Texas that he comes from a long line of actually making firearms. His dad ran a small business that back in the, back in the 60s or before Gun Control Act of 1968 kicked in, that killed a lot of the Saturday Night Special stuff. They actually made firearms. They made cap guns and stuff for, good Lord, a very long time, since back in like maybe the 20s or 30s, they were making cap guns. So really rural background, really rural roots, and yet he, for whatever reason, because we've yet to get a rationale behind it, you know, he sought to shoot that down, which was ridiculous. Now, thankfully, it passed. Now, if you're talking about constitutional carry across the board, Texas has introduced...
No, that's the one.
That's the one you were talking about? Okay. As we say, because constitutional carry across the board, Texas, and we kind of suck in a way because our legislature only meets every other year. So if you don't get it done, you got to wait 2 years. And we have, for the last, good Lord, 20 years or something, there's been some form of constitutional carry that's went through our legislative process, and it's died pretty much every single time. It's usually died in calendars, which is a, you know, it doesn't even really get out of committee is what that means. But for the longest time, the head of the House, and he actually is no longer there, which is a plus, but the head of the House has been the one that's always railed against constitutional carry here. And with him gone, this last session was the first session without him there. And there was quite a bit of turmoil because of that, because some of his cronies and stuff are still there. So I think we're still looking at another election cycle or maybe two. And people in Texas, you know, checking the right box on the ballot and voting for the right people. And we'll be able, we've been moving for a long time toward constitutional carry. It's sad that other states like Kentucky, Oklahoma, South Dakota, you know, have all signed onto it recently, and here we sit in Texas without it. But, that's part of my point. I'm glad you brought that up, because it was just like we're talking about with Trump. You know, people want to see all of this as a liberal Democrat, Republican conservative issue, and the Second Amendment's not. It doesn't matter where you fall on any political or social spectrum. It applies to you.
Yeah, and it's important that you grasp it. One of the great things about the free concealed carry class is that we have all walks of life come through there. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure other classes as well, but I think we're more accessible to a lot more people, a lot larger demographics because of it. I think a lot of classes that charge $200, $150 or whatever, it kind of limits that and decreases the demographics and the diversity in the classes, just based off socioeconomic issues alone. But in our classes, it's been interesting to see the amount of quote unquote liberals that come in that are super pro-gun, more pro-gun than Trump is. Now we may not agree on other political issues, but we agree on one thing and in my view, the most important one socially, and that's guns, because guns for me equals freedom. A lot of people think I'm a big gun guy and stuff like that. No, I'm not. I like guns, but I see guns as a form of self-defense, and I see guns as a form of freedom. I don't see guns as a meme. I don't see guns as a show-off tool. I don't see guns in that manner. So a lot of people come to me and like, oh, what do you think about the new Yeet cannon and stuff like that? Like, no, I'm more worried about what Trump is doing. Right. I'm more worried about what they're doing. And there's a lot of people on the left that gun owners are demonizing because they do associate with liberal organizations, mm-hmm. rather than conservative political organizations. But they're still highly pro-gun. Like, you don't know how many Bernie supporters come through my class. Uh-huh. Weirdish. I was about to cuss, see? So I told you. Caught it.
You caught it. It's all good.
it's really weird. But they're big-time pro-gun. And I've sat with him and I've talked to him, and they're not just pro-gun. They think all gun laws are absolutely silly.
Uh-huh. Wow. And you know, that's interesting, because Bernie wants to, you know, he's old school socialist. And I found out here, a few weeks, maybe a month ago or something, I knew absolutely nothing about this, but there is actually a Socialist for Guns organization out there. And I'm like, are you kidding me? That's interesting.
It's crazy.
You know.
And here's the thing is we got to work with him,
yeah.
because
yeah.
we may not agree on the other stuff politically, but we agree on that one issue. And again, in my opinion, that's what's going to defend all of us. And that's the beauty of all this is I may not agree with your economic standpoint, but when it comes to it, as long as you leave me alone and I leave you alone, like we should fight together for our freedoms to be as crazy as we want to be, as long as we're not hurting one another.
Right.
As long as we're not affecting each other's pockets, affecting each other's lives, it shouldn't matter. So for me, I've always been baffled. There's an organization that I'm sure you're very well aware of, the Liberal Gun Owners, and they're pretty active. Mm-hmm. And every time they pop up and make a comment, it's almost without fail. A lot of the right, extreme right wing, and I'm generalizing here, so I got to be careful with that. Not all of them, but I'm right. I definitely generalizing here. Kind of demonize them. Oh, you're a liberal, and all the expletives and stuff like that,
sure.
just because they're not necessarily politically aligned in other aspects.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm not. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how we. I'm not sure how we get people to rise above that, or, you know, I know I've gotten into quite a few. It frustrates me that around here I've gotten into some heated debates, civil debates,
yeah.
but heated nonetheless, where it almost seems like people would trade. They're completely trade their Second Amendment rights for something else. In other words, you know, oh, well, I would give up constitutional carrier, I would give up license to carrier, I would give up AR-15s or bump stocks or whatever it might be if we could get X, Y, and Z. And they don't see the fallacy in that. They don't see that once you give that up, you're pretty much screwed at that point because the government can do whatever they want. You took the consequences away at that point when you've given that up.
Yes. I mean, you kind of have to look at it like as a parent. One of the things about parent that we learn really quick is if you're not consistent, then eventually your kids are going to get out of line because you're not consistent in your discipline, you're not consistent. And I think that's why the youngest kid always gets away with a lot more because by that time we're older.
we're tired.
we're not into chasing kids anymore and breaking branches and disciplining the way we did with our first kids. But that consistency is no longer there, and it really creates chaos, an imbalance in the family structure because of the lack of that consistency. So when you have a strict pro-gun populace for a long period of time, and then all of a sudden here comes the 1900s where everybody's like, yeah, guns, whatever. I've got my car, I've got my new TV, I've got money, I've got whatever, I don't need guns. And then fast forward, here we are, 2019, all of those compromises, there was a big lack of consistency. And now here we are with an imbalance in the family structure.
Right. Now, coming from an immigrant family, do you, is any of your projects or any of your outreach, is it directed toward, you know, Latino, Mexican, that sort of thing, or are you pretty much all inclusive?
I try to be all inclusive. There's some stuff that I do that's specific to the urban demographic, not just Hispanics, but the urban demographic.
Okay.
This is another one that a lot of people get mad at me about. But when the whole Ferguson situation came about, now I'm not gonna say where I stand on that. But I will say that the Black Lives Matter organization here in the state of Colorado reached out and said, hey, we want to do gun classes with you. Will you come out? Nobody wants to do gun classes with me. And obviously my response is like, yeah, we will absolutely do it. Overall, we're inclusive, but I do stuff with organizations that I don't agree with politically. I've done classes for the Socialist Party and the Green Party here in the state of Colorado because a lot of these organizations are at a point where it's just like, okay, like we see the importance in these guns. So I try not to pigeonhole myself into one demographic, but I definitely do classes where it's just for just one specific group. And obviously me being Hispanic, that's a large component of it. I'm a pundit for Univision and Telemundo. So anytime there's a gun issue, especially here in the state of Colorado, I get called to do that. So my outreach with them is pretty extensive, but I don't promote myself in that manner. I don't.
Gotcha.
Not yet. I think at some point we will have that side of it. But at this moment, I try to be all inclusive because I can't be guns for everyone that only approaches Mexicans.
That's true. Yeah. That's absolutely true. And, you know, those issues, it's kind of like the Second Amendment. I mean, you know, when you start talking about inner city, you know, yeah, I'm sure that the minority is the bulk of, minorities are the bulk of that demographic. But, heck, even with minorities, who are you talking about? Are you talking about Black? Are you talking about Mexican? Are you talking about, you know, Asian? Are you know, just saying minority could be anything. But there's a huge mix. I mean, when you start talking about inner city, there's the equivalent of what we would call trailer trash or white trash even in the inner cities that are dealing with the same issues that everybody is dealing with. So, you know, it's one of them things where it goes back to the Second Amendment literally being for everybody, whether you're in the inner city or a rural area, or it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think what brings a lot of those groups together is the social economic issue. And I think that's been part of the success of guns for everyone on the concealed carry side is you don't have to be somebody who has a constant $400, $500 in the bank account to go attend a class. You can be somebody who's on your last dollar and still show up to concealed carry class and feel like you can be empowered and feel like you can actually defend yourself and not feel vulnerable when you're out and about. And I think that that's unfortunately what does bring a lot of those communities together when you're in the inner city is we're just broke. We've got no money.
Right. A lot of people out in the country are that way too. I got news for you.
Yeah, fair enough.
Not just an inner city issue. I can assure you.
No, it's funny you bring that because we attempted to move out to the country. We bought some property, and you know we were going to do the country thing. That's really what I want to do ultimately. And moved down there and then quickly found out, wait a minute, there's no jobs out here. There's no, even, I mean, I'm self-employed. I do the training and stuff like that. But even that is just a limited amount of people that you can teach a concealed carry class to. You still have to travel to the cities. You still have to go out and mingle. So it was definitely an eye-opener. And absolutely, yeah, there's a lot of struggling families out there.
Yeah, right. Well, it's it's good to know that you have that mechanism in place to offer that. Now, as far as the funding for these free classes, I mean, they're free is not free. Everybody should know that it's costing somebody something somewhere. So, as far as your funding for getting these, how have you been going about doing that?
100% student funded. Students donate or people donate, but I would say that 99% of our funding comes from students during the classes. Very rarely do people leave the class and like 6 months later be like, oh, I remember that class and I benefited from it. Let's throw some value back into it.
Nice.
So we rely 100% on private donations. We don't take corporate money. We don't take political money. We don't take any of that stuff. We are 100% privately funded through you guys, people listening to your podcast, people on social media, just people who hear about us. That's how we're funded.
Now, as far as I want to dive into maybe the classes just a little bit, as far as the free concealed carry class that you guys do, do you go over it all as far as talking with those students about, you know, what firearm that may best suit them for their particular needs and that sort of thing? Or is it just primarily the laws and the regulations and getting the actual certification?
Every class is different because the students are different. So I have to adapt to what my students are like at that particular class. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I like to dig into human behavior a lot and stuff like that. It's provided me, these classes have actually provided me with the opportunity to do a lot of social experiments. All that to say is that if you come to one of my classes at any given moment, you'll see that the same type of people kind of come to the same class. We'll have a class where it's all like frat boy type guys, and then the next class, it's kind of like the minority class. It's weird. It's interesting. All that to say that I kind of have to adapt to whatever the class is feeling, because there's some classes where every single person who attends, all 30 students, all 40 students, all 70 students already have guns. They don't want to talk about choosing a gun, but a great majority of our classes, we do cover how to choose a gun, how to choose a holster, which is just giving people tips, obviously, because I can't tell people what to choose. But we do talk about that. We talk about ways to be prepared, the aftermath of what happens in a self-defense situation, what to do afterwards. So we cover everything people would basically have to know or should know if it hits the fan.
Right. Now, do you do with probably not with a concealed carry class, but do you offer any type of medical training at all?
Yes, we do. We actually have an EMT that does our our quote-unquote TAC Med classes. A lot of people call them TAG Med classes, but it's basically learning how to stop the bleed, tourniquets, and we don't dig too much into the tactical version of stuff. I've never been a big fan of the tactical, have your chest rig on and a million magazines, and you, right. you look fancy as hell, but you don't shoot worth a shit. So I've never gotten into that. But he does a pretty good job at explaining how to apply a chest seal, how to make a makeshift chest seal, mm-hmm. The tourniquet, just the basics everybody should know if you're going to carry a gun.
Yeah.
We definitely offer those. I don't teach those, so that's why we don't have them as often. He's actually in school right now. He's going to become a PA, physician's assistant. So that's where he's at right now. So he comes out every time he has a break, and he does a class for us.
Right. And that's the stuff that, the stop the bleed, things like that, is the stuff that's most important. I mean, the point is not to, be a ER doc or something like that on scene. The point is to, keep that person alive until help can get to them or you can get them to help. That's kind of the purpose of that type of training.
And that's a big frustrating point, and I've had to have this conversation a lot, especially during classes, because a lot of people come to concealed carry classes after a mass shooting. Mm-hmm. Oh, and if I was there with my gun, I was like, well, maybe you were there, but your gun was worthless. How about a tourniquet? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, here in the state of Colorado, we've been kind of in the news a lot for mass shootings. It's almost like we like are home base for mass shooting. We had Columbine, we had the shooting at a Chuck E. Cheese, we had the Aurora Theater shooting, just recently another school shooting, so it's, we're constantly in the news for mass shooting. There's one at two churches. Mm-hmm. All that to say is that after these tragedies, people come to these concealed carry classes thinking they're going to play hero, but they never attend a medical class, where that's where you can save more lives, in my opinion, than anything else. In the Aurora Theater situation, it took the EMTs, if I'm not mistaken, it took them an hour after it was done for them to gather the testicular fortitude to go in there and start saving lives. Mm-hmm. A lot more lives could have been saved that day if somebody was just there with the chest seal or,
yep,
or a tourniquet or applying pressure on a wound or whatever it might be. But no, everybody was just concerned on having a gun, which is great. I mean, have a gun, but I mean, that's not the tool for everything.
Well, I mean, that creates a situation, having the quote-unquote good guy with the gun. I mean, that creates the situation to stop the threat. But if the threat has already inflicted damage, that's going to need to be dealt with. And then so that's where the medical training comes in. That's where you're absolutely right. That's where the lives being saved truly comes into play.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that, in my opinion, is, I mean, many reasons why the Second Amendment is going away. I don't know what your take on that is, but for me, I've said this for a very long time. The Second Amendment community is going away, and a lot faster than what people want to admit. Yeah, there's states that are passing constitutional carry like that, but I think that's just a front. In that one victory, we've had so many more setbacks, mm-hmm. and a lot of complacent people who are doing absolutely nothing. Right now, the way I compare the Second Amendment community to is that individual who is eating a piece of candy, drops the wrapper on the floor, acknowledges that the wrapper's on the floor, but decides to just walk away from it instead of picking it up and throwing it in the garbage or doing something about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what the Second Amendment community is doing, is like they see that we've created garbage, and instead of doing something about it, they're just allowing it to go downhill.
Well, and I think it's a bigger issue than that. Because that's the attitude. It's sort of the attitude of somebody else will do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an attitude we've got no matter what we're talking about. No matter what issue we're talking about. People are not engaged. They're not a part of their community anymore. They're not paying attention to their neighbors and their friends and being involved in life in general like we once were in this country. where, you know, you had community barbecues and, you know, all that kind of stuff going on. And you know, I'm not, you know, I'm religious, but I'm not, you know, the big Christian or anything like that. But, you know, you had a drop in the number of people attending churches and stuff like that. And if for no other reason other than the social aspect and the feeling of family and community within going to church and church events, you know, I don't know. I think that's had an impact on society as well. So, yeah, I mean, I agree with you. You're absolutely right. But I would, like I said, I'd take it a step further and say that, you know, it's everybody. It's society in general that's just got that attitude of somebody else will do it. It's not my problem.
Correct. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there's really not much more to add to that other than yes, it sucks. But yes, right. And this is why we're exhausted, and a lot of people don't get this. I'm going to be vulnerable. This is what a lot of people like myself, Amaj Ture, or Rob Pincus, Michael Sodini, a lot of people who are involved in the Second Amendment community one way or another, who are basically bearing the weight for everybody else and not doing anything. Like, yeah, I kind of like the attention of being the largest handgun training company in the state of Colorado. I love saying that, but at the same time, a small portion of me wishes I can have competition. Mm-hmm. Because right now I have no competition. Like there's plenty for everyone, by the way. But I like in that respect, like I have zero competition. So it's just like every day is a competition against myself to prove something, really, just to myself. To help the Second Amendment community to propel this, but there's nobody else that's stepping up and doing this. And it gets exhausting. Like, it gets to a point where it's just like, who else is going to take this over when I'm gone? Who else is going to do this when I've had enough of the Second Amendment community because of their BS, and I don't want to do this anymore? Who else is going to step up and do this? And the reality is that we definitely need a lot more people who do this stuff. Yeah, me personally, I know I like to have a lot of friendly competitions with other instructors and other organizations and see who gets more students and stuff like that, just because it's fun. I'm an entrepreneur more than anything else, to be honest with you. So I love that game. I love that push and that competition. But if you look around, there's really not a whole lot going on out there. There's a few here and there, but overall, there's really not a whole lot. And that's sad. For as many gun owners as we have in the U.S., there should be a bunch of these organizations out here doing what we're doing in every state.
Well, it goes
and there
back,
isn't.
It goes back to, in my mind, it's sort of like when you're dealing with the two-way fight. It's sort of like government, sort of like politics in a way, because you've got people that, oh, they're all involved. It's election season. They vote. That's it. They're done. Well, I voted. Yeah. Well, hold on. You need to hold these. There's still more work to be done. It's like voting is not the end of it. And I think people with 2A, I think there's a large portion of the, you know, the gun owners out there, the community at large, that donate, whether it's to, you know, Guns for Everyone, to you, or maybe they donate through Patreon to various, you know, podcasts, firearm channels, things like that. Maybe they donate to Second Amendment Foundation, GOA, you know, whoever it might be, and they make that monetary donation, and they're done, right? They're, oh, I did my part. Well, no, you didn't. I mean, the monetary support, that's appreciated, and that goes a long way, and it helps, but you need to have skin in the game. You need to be involved. You know, get out here and be active. You don't have to come travel to D.C. You don't have to travel to other states. Just get out in your community and get involved. Get involved on a local level. I work a lot with youth groups. I mean, find your local youth shooting sports group and get involved with them. You know, and while you're on the firing line and you're teaching safety and, you know, you're doing all the training, talk about the Second Amendment and what it means and things like that. But get out there in those communities and get involved. Again, it's more than just monetary donation. And unfortunately, people, when we say support this cause or support that cause, what that translates to for most people is give money. And that's really not what
Correct.
We're saying.
Yeah, and the Yeah, I mean, because now you have somebody to point a finger at. Because if it doesn't happen, it's not your fault because you did your part. Now you can just point the finger at somebody else. And it's just an easy way out.
Right. So on that, I think we're up against time for this week. So we'll call it quits for now. I want you, before you leave, though, throw out, if you would, all the different places that people can follow you, can find out more about Guns for Everyone and all the different projects going on.
Yeah, to find us, very, very, very easy. GunsForEveryone.com on Instagram, Guns for Everyone. This, instead of spaces, it's underscore on Instagram. We're on the Twitter. Guns for Everyone on the Facebook. We're Guns for Everyone. So pretty easy to find us. We're not terribly difficult to find. Many different projects that we got going on, especially if you're in the Colorado area, if you're listening to this from Colorado, a lot of exciting stuff that we've got coming on. Again, Tony Okafor joining the team. That's really huge for us. Not just because of who she is, but because of what she's going to be doing with the community. And if anybody wants to be involved, again, just reach out to us, Guns for Everyone. Pretty easy to Google, pretty easy to find, especially on Instagram and Facebook. I'm constantly posting stuff, so we're pretty accessible.
Awesome stuff. So thanks again, Edgar. It's been a great conversation. I enjoyed it, and hopefully we can have you back sometime.
Absolutely. I appreciate the invite.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertac.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertac. Have a great weekend.